If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to New Books in Christian Studies, a channel on the New Books Network podcast. I am your host, Crawford Gribben, and today my guest is Jonathan G. Klein. Jonathan is senior editor at Hendrickson Publishers in Massachusetts. He's also the author of the recent monograph, Elusive Sound Play in the Hebrew Bible, published by SBL in 2016. And today we're talking to Jonathan about his new project, the 2 Minutes a Day Biblical Language Series, which is a series of, I think, 5 volumes, including work on Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic. Jonathan, thank you very much for coming onto the show and congratulations on your project.
Thank you so much, Crawford. It's a real pleasure to be here talking with you.
Well, it's really a pleasure for us to have you. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself before we begin to talk about your publications?
Sure. I'd be glad to give you a brief synopsis of my academic life. I was born north of Boston, and when I was really young, my family moved out to Southern California because my dad was teaching in seminary out there. So I lived in California for 6 years. That was Westminster Theological Seminary. And then we moved back to Massachusetts, and that's where I grew up, north of Boston, near another seminary, Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, where my dad was also working, and my grandfather was teaching there too. He taught there for many years. So my grandfather and dad both have the same name. It's Meredith Klein. So my grandfather is the more well-known of the two, but my dad is named after him as well. Both Merediths were Old Testament scholars, and they taught Old Testament and Hebrew, and my dad also worked in the library at Gordon Conwell. So I grew up around seminaries and, with the Bible, kind of academic study of the Bible being in the background of my life. So those were important things in shaping who I am. I grew up in a small Presbyterian denomination, so that's my faith tradition. I did my undergraduate degree at Cornell University in upstate New York in Ithaca, and I took a fair number of courses in a variety of subjects there: computer science, math, some courses in the engineering school. And so it kind of took me a while to settle on what I wanted to do for my degree, but eventually I guess the gravity of the family background pulled me back, so I majored in Near Eastern studies, and ancient Near Eastern studies specifically. But I felt privileged to be able to take courses in a variety of subjects, and I think in certain ways that's informed the way I think about the different projects I work on at Hendrickson, for example, which we'll talk about more later. Then after college, I moved back to my hometown, and I did a master's degree in biblical languages at Gordon Conwell, which was a lot of fun, and it was great to dive into the biblical text in the original there. And then after seminary, I went to Harvard and I did a PhD there in Hebrew Bible. And I graduated in 2014. So you'd mentioned my book with SBL Press, Elusive Sound Play in the Hebrew Bible. So that's abridgment and slight revision of my dissertation. Yeah, I had a lot of fun working on that project. It brings together various strands of my education. At Cornell, I studied with Gary Rendsburg, who's a wonderful person and great scholar. And he works on literary aspects of the Bible, and he's particularly interested in sound play and other kinds of word play. Actually, I'll just mention as an aside that Hendrickson just published a large, wonderful work by him called How the Bible is Written, which I would highly recommend. It's very interesting, but it brings together a lot of Gary's interests and studies, including on wordplay and other things. So Gary had a big influence on my thinking, and one thing I've always appreciated about him is that he really has a feel for how interesting and fun studying the Bible can be, and reading closely and paying attention to all of its literary details. And so I felt that in my dissertation, I was able to have that mindset. And so it's just a really fun project to work on. Yeah, what else in terms of educational background? Well, I should mention that the most important thing that happened to me at Harvard was meeting my wife, Joanna, who was doing, she did her MDiv, that's what she was doing at the time there when we met, and then she went on to do her PhD in Hebrew Bible at Harvard as well. So people often ask us if we, you know, have, say we must have really interesting, you know, dinner table conversations and all that about Bible, and I usually respond that we have three little kids, and so usually at dinner table we're just, you know, we're talking about all sorts of stuff, but it's all never really Bible. So it's a fun and busy time for us, but occasionally we do get to talk about Bible, which is fun.
Good. You're obviously, you know, very appreciative of your family background, your father and grandfather, and their interest in Hebrew Bible, Hebrew language, ancient Near East literature and culture as well. And you have taken a lead in putting together for publication some materials by Meredith G. Klein, I believe.
Yeah, I have. Thanks for asking about those. Yeah, my grandfather, Meredith G. Klein, he was a Reformed biblical scholar and theologian, and he published works on covenant theology primarily, and other aspects of kind of Hebrew Bible and ancient Near East. He has several books that people who know of him and like his material are pretty fond of, like Kingdom Prologue, and he had a book on Deuteronomy called Treaty of the Great King, where he compares it to the Hittite treaties, the book of Deuteronomy to the Hittite treaties. One of the things I always appreciated about his work, and I think others that I've spoken with appreciate as well, is his creativity. He had a conservative and reformed outlook in terms of his theology, but he was always interested in expressing that in fresh ways and in tying that point of view, or elucidating maybe how it's richness can come to the fore by through comparison with ancient Near Eastern data and extra biblical data. And so a lot of his insights are found in articles that he wrote over the years. And so I had it in mind for some years to try to collect some of what I felt to be his most insightful articles, and also most pastorally sensitive articles as well. He always had that side of him too, in addition to the academic side. He had a very pastoral nature in terms of the points of why he was teaching and writing. And so I had it in mind to collect those articles in a volume. After I started working at Hendrickson, I suggested that we might do that here. And the publishing board was thought it was a good idea, and they accepted the idea. So a few years ago, we published a book called Essential Writings of Meredith G. Klein. Came out in 2017. So it's a collection of 16 of his articles, and I structured them according to certain kind of broad categories: creation, covenant law and the state, faith, the gospel and justification, redemption and resurrection and consummation. I put the articles in these different categories in order to show the different topics which he addressed, and also to give readers a feel for the scope and also our long-term arc of his writing projects. So yeah, I think it's a nice volume in terms of bringing his works together, and for people who have enjoyed them over the years, and also bringing them to new audiences. Also, my dad wrote a biographical sketch of his dad, my grandfather, for this book too. So I think, and I wrote a little introduction for it, in which I try to contextualize my understanding of his work. So that was a nice family project to work on. My grandfather had passed away by the time we worked on this, but my dad and I were able to put it together. And so, I think it's a nice family collection to do.
That's wonderful. And before we start talking in more detail about your publications, Jonathan, could you tell us about your role at Hendrickson, what kinds of things you do, and perhaps also as an editor, what kinds of projects you're looking for?
Sure. I came on in 2014 after I finished at Harvard, and I came on as the academic editor. Hendrickson's a pretty small company, so the academic editor at the time, Alan Emery, retired, and I took the position, and now I'm senior, my title is senior editor. One of the things I love, so many things about Hendrickson, one of the things I really appreciate is that we're kind of small and nimble in terms of what we're able to do, and so we can be creative in certain ways, and in terms of the projects we take on. Another aspect of our size is that I'm able to deal to one degree or another with most of the aspects of the publishing process. So I'm do a lot of the academic acquisitions for Hendrickson. I am involved with copy editing, project management, author relations. I work very closely with our typesetter. I joke to him that I'm kind of a wannabe typesetter and graphic designer. So maybe he thinks I work a little too closely with him, but we have a good time, and we've been able to produce some really solid resources together by combining our skills. I work, with our marketing team as well, and talking to endorsers and things. So I really appreciate being able to work in all aspects of almost all aspects of the publishing process. It's given me a good sense for what's involved from the beginning to the end of the process. So in terms of, as I mentioned, I'm the primary acquisitions editor in terms of academic books here. I'd say we have two main foci in terms of acquisitions right now, or I do. One of them is, the main one is biblical language material. So one of the primary things we'll talk about today is the Keep Up Your Biblical Language series. And also I just came out with another a book kind of in that vein, but a little different, on Proverbs, called The Proverb a Day in Biblical Hebrew. We can talk a little bit more about that later. And we have some other great things in the pipeline, a few of which I can mention later too. So we're trying to just produce innovative, fresh resources that are really user-friendly, that help people connect with the biblical languages. There are a lot of great resources out there, and a number of publishers are producing really good stuff. And so we're just trying to make a contribution where we see gaps in the field. And, I try to think, and for myself, and also talk to people and ask what resources would they like to see out there to really help them connect with the biblical texts in a way that they can't right now. So that's the main focus that I'm really excited about and passionate about, and I think that the company is, very enthusiastic about, is biblical language resources. So I'm always happy to talk to folks if they have ideas about products they want to write, or or ones that they want us to produce, or somebody else to produce that they'd like to see out there. A more minor focus maybe, but still sort of central to my acquisitions role, is we're trying to produce really accessible, relatively brief monographs on topics that are of interest to the academy and the church, and that are based on really good scholarship, but are also very accessible. So, for example, a couple of years ago, we published The Bible and Archaeology by Mathieu Richel, a wonderful French scholar. And the feedback we've received on the book has been really great. I think people really appreciate how accessible it is, how ironic it is. Mathieu is very even-handed, and he just is able very well in the book to communicate clearly what the promises of archaeology are, what its limits are, how the study of archaeology interfaces with study of the biblical texts in a way that's understandable and winsome, and that, you know, can reach many audiences. And so that kind of book we value as well, since, you know, Hendrickson's basic mission is to produce high quality books that are that serve the academy and the church. And so those are, those two foci of mine kind of fit into that overall mission.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Now, the emphasis you've just explained, both personally and professionally, in encouraging the maintenance of biblical language skills seems to be something that a lot of people are quite concerned about nowadays, isn't it? Lots of seminaries, universities, colleges emphasize the teaching, particularly of Greek and Hebrew. But so often, people who spend time learning these languages struggle to maintain their skills. Why is that a problem? And how does this new series, the 2 Minutes a Day Biblical Language series, address that problem?
Yeah, those are great observations and questions. Yeah, as you know well, with seminaries, I think, are increasingly feeling burdened financially and for other reasons to, and it's difficult for the ones that even historically have had requirements for Greek and Hebrew to keep those up. And of course, the residential model of seminaries is changing with online education. So there's a lot going on in that area, and there are some real challenges. I think it goes without saying that knowing the biblical languages well is vital for understanding the biblical text as well as one can, for teaching it, for preaching it, for doing scholarship on the biblical texts. I mean, it's kind of a platitude to say those things, but yeah, I think the real question is, you brought up, is how do seminaries and other institutions and publishers, you know, keep the study and use of these languages alive? Because I think most people in the church, for example, would say, you know, it's very important to study the biblical languages, or for a minister to study them. And yet there are so many things in our present lives that make it difficult to do that. So mentioned the kind of institutional challenges that seminaries face. And obviously there are a lot of challenges that any of us individually face as well that make it difficult to retain the languages, especially after we've studied them. I guess there's maybe two issues here. One is, are people actually going to study the languages in the first place? And I was kind of speaking to that a moment ago, and that's maybe more on the institutional side of things. And I don't pretend to have any expertise on that question or know what the answers are. I mean, I think there probably have to be a number of answers to that. But I focus more on, there are so many good resources that help people learn Greek and Hebrew. So I tend to think that my role is not to be putting out, you know, another introductory grammar necessarily, or kind of a introductory resources of that nature, because there's so many great ones out there and professors can choose from among them. What I focus on more is helping people keep up the languages, because in my experience, that's something that most people have a lot of difficulty with. So let me just, to be concrete, let me just mention a few challenges that I think a lot of us face, regardless of our particular circumstances, in keeping up with the languages, Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic. But I mean, these considerations could go pretty much for any other language as well. I think one of the most obvious challenges is time. There's so many things that vie for our time. I mentioned earlier that my wife and I both have PhDs in Hebrew Bible, but mostly when we're at home, you know, we're raising our kids and trying to have fun as a family and, you know, cook and pay the bills and things like that. And so, so many of us just, you know, we have busy lives, just kind of doing the normal day-to-day things that even when we have advanced degrees in these subjects, we're not just going to sit down with our Hebrew Bible every day and open it up. It's just that there's not time a lot of days because of all the other things we're doing. Of course, technology provides a big challenge these days. So many people are addicted to their phones, and you know, our phones are always with us, and the internet is usually accessible from all sorts of devices. People tend to be overscheduled. So just these obvious things that we're all aware of that demand our time and that can distract us. There are so many good things we spend our time in, but obviously there are a lot of things we can fritter away our time on too that can distract us, the not so good things. So time is a big factor. I'll just say one more thing in that regard. A lot of pastors are bivocational, so their time is really stretched for that reason. And in addition to that, there's just one of the main takeaways I got from being in seminary and studying with a lot of ministers in training was just, I got a sense of how difficult it is to be a member of the clergy. And I have a lot of respect for pastors and other clergy members who are just trying to meet so many demands and trying to minister to in so many different ways. It's just an amazingly difficult job. And so I really have a lot of respect for people who do that. And I sympathize with the demands on their time. And of course, that's a large portion of the audience we're trying to reach. A second thing, in addition to time, that I find that people find challenging is I think there's just kind of an inertia, and maybe there are psychological inhibitions that people have when it comes to keeping up languages. Something that I've heard many times over the years, especially in the United States, is, you know, people will say things like, well, I studied Spanish for 4 years in high school, but I don't really remember much of it at all. I don't know the degree to which the second language retention is a difficulty for people in other countries. I know when I've traveled more in Europe or the Middle East, for example, there's just more opportunities for people to speak different languages. Many people are bilingual or trilingual growing up. But I know that here in the States, it's a common problem that people will study a language and just not retain it very well. And it's the basic principle of use it or lose it, which, of course, we face with any subject. I mean, how much of the mathematics that I studied in school do I remember? Not necessarily very much. But I think there's something about the way our brains are wired that makes it particularly difficult for us to retain languages or learn new ones as adults. That's a commonly documented fact that when you're younger, it's just generally easier to learn new languages. And so I think there's a certain kind of inertia because of that. People look back and they think, I spent all of this time learning this language, but they feel guilty maybe or discouraged because they can't really remember much of it. So I think there are kind of psychological factors that make people reluctant to pick up a text in a language that they've studied. And especially in seminary, people tend to, or other school environments, people often spend a lot of money and time studying these languages, time away from their family, for example. And so that can also produce, I think, guilt and discouragement when you think of everything they put into studying it, but now, you know, they aren't really able to use it. So I think that's something I try to keep in mind in thinking about how can we develop products that help people overcome the time issue and that kind of those psychological factors or the inertia element that might prevent them. I'm happy to mention a couple other things that I think maybe make it difficult for people to retain languages, but I know I've been going on for a while here, so you can stop me if you want.
Oh, it's great, Jonathan. It's great to hear you explain all this. So you've described the problem very, very precisely, and you've also provided a solution to this problem, the 2 Minutes a Day Biblical Language series. A brilliant five-part series. I'm looking here at the first volume in Greek. There's a second volume in Greek. There's 2 volumes of Hebrew text, and there's a 5th volume of Aramaic text. These are, I mean, you mentioned before design. These are beautifully designed books. They're a very familiar shape and color.
Yeah, thank you for your kind comments about the design. I really value good design, and I think Hendrickson as a publishing company does as well. So it's one thing I really appreciate about working here is that aspect of things that we focus on. Excellence of content, but also of design, so that the user can have a positive experience. I think one thing that stands in the front of my mind these days is that there's so much information out there. You know, if you have an internet connection, you can basically have access to any information you want at any time. And there's so many good books out there in terms of biblical languages, as I said. But I think given the glut of information, many people, it seems, want an authentic reading experience, a user experience that is satisfying not only on the level of content, but also on the level of aesthetics. And obviously, that's always been true, you know, for probably human history. And I was just reading, I know you work in early print culture, I believe, so I'd be interested to hear more about what you've studied in that regard. But and of course, you know, one can mention different things about, you know, generational issues like, you know, millennials wanting more of an experience and kind of in terms of using products. I think maybe because of these factors of this kind of this glut of information, but I think people of every generation, you know, appreciate having information packaged in a beautiful way. And so that's something I try to think about a lot. I think also, let me address how the 2 Minutes a Day books specifically deal with like the challenges I was mentioning earlier in terms of accessing the languages. So the production and the formatting definitely is part of that. Maybe I'll start though with talking about the time and inertia problems that I discussed, and then I could talk about the formatting. So I think in terms of the time issue, the 2 Minutes a Day books, I'll do my best to explain them here in case the listeners, you know, if they don't have a copy in their hands, it might be a little bit hard to visualize what's going on in the page, but there are sample pages online. Basically, the books are 365-day readers, so there's one page per day, and each page has a verse from the Bible. So, yeah, I have the first volume of the Biblical Greek volumes here in my hands right now. And so So to address the time issue, the book allows you to just focus on one verse at a time, one verse a day if you like. Of course, you can read more if you want to or you have more time. But it gives you the space that if you just have a little bit of time, you can still get benefit from the book and still get into the language and review. So I think one thing that's difficult, if you just pick up a Hebrew Bible or a Greek Bible and you're staring at a large mass of text, you think, where do I start? How much should I read today? There's just this large block of text in front of me. It's kind of daunting. And so I tried to address that issue and the issue of time by just having small bite-sized portion of text per day. And I make different suggestions in the preface about how one can use the page for the day, regardless of how much time you have. So basically, what's on the page is there's the verse in English with a few of the Greek words from the verse are kind of embedded in the English verse, and the corresponding English text is in bold. And then after that, I present a new word for the day with some glosses, some basic glosses, a new vocabulary word, which is one of the words that's embedded in the text. And then I provide the Greek text for the verse with the words for the day, the three words highlighted. And then I have a section at the bottom of the page where the English text and the Greek text are broken into phrases or clauses that correspond to each other, again, with all the words highlighted. So basically, there's a number of things going on each page, but there are several ways that you can access the text depending on how much time you have. So in the preface, I say that, let's say you only have like 10 or 15 seconds to look at this. You just want to glance at it. Well, it's better to open the book and just glance at the page than not open it all on a day. So, you know, you might glance at the word for the day and just remind yourself of its meanings, or if you're not familiar with the word, you're learning a new Greek word. Or you might just read the verse in English with the Greek words embedded, and you just, again, are reminded of a few words from Greek, basically what they mean. Or if you have a minute or 2 minutes, you could do both of those things. Mull over the vocabulary word for the day, read through the text in English, paying attention to the Greek words that are embedded in it. You might choose instead to try to work through the Greek verse, the entire Greek verse, if you're able to, or just through a clause or two of it. So there's a lot of ways you can use the book even in a short amount of time. Naturally, if you have a lot more time, or even a little more time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you can read multiple pages. You can read and reread one particular page. You can dwell on the words that, you know, you don't know, look them up in a lexicon to get more of a sense for them. So I tried to make the book versatile in terms of time. The marketing hook, of course, is 2 minutes a day. And that's the point of that, is to say that you should feel that you can really work on staying in the language even with just a little bit of time every day. The point is regular practice, even for a little bit of time. There's been studies recently about how the same thing is true of exercise, for example. Even if you go for, you know, a brief walk every day, that's like way better for your health than not doing it at all. And of course, it doesn't mean you're going to be in super good shape if you just go for a very brief walk every day or something. Same with the languages. If you just spend, you know, 2 minutes with Greek every day, it doesn't mean that you will have mastered New Testament Greek or, you know, be able to read anything you want in the New Testament without help. But it can go a long way toward keeping it fresh and keeping it in your mind and really giving you benefit. But obviously, you know, the more time you spend, the better it is for your abilities. I'm going on at length again, so I'm happy to talk about other things.
This is all good, Jonathan. It's all good. So there are, in this 5-volume series, just remind us, 2 volumes in Greek, 2 volumes in Hebrew, a single volume in Aramaic. And I think you just mentioned previously a new project, which is a similar kind of project, but using the Hebrew text of Proverbs.
That's right. Yeah, this one is it's called A Proverb a Day in Biblical Hebrew. And so in some ways, it's a companion volume to the 2 Minutes a Day series. It's not technically part of it, and it's a bit different. So the similarity is that the size of the book is about the same, and it's a 365-day reader with one verse per page. So the basic concept is the same, just allowing you to focus on a nugget of text each sitting, if you want. But in this book, what I do is the formatting on each page is different from the 2 minutes a day book. So what I do is each verse in the book of Proverbs, well, not every verse, but most of the verses in the book of Proverbs, they're basically bicola, or they have two poetic lines. So, the first line is laid out at the top of the page. The second line is laid out roughly in the middle of the page. And then below each poetic line, I basically put each word on a line, construct phrases, so kind of genitive phrases I keep together on a line. And then I provide a number of glosses, normally more than one, and sometimes many potential glosses for each word that I think fit the context. And all the verbs are parsed as well. And so basically I try to give you all the building blocks that you would need to work through the verse and wrestle with it, think about its syntax, what you think the semantics of the particular words are in that verse. And then 2 pages later, so you have to flip the page if you want to see this, I provide my own translation. And because I provide a straightforward rendering of everything on the page for the day, I allowed myself to be somewhat creative in the renderings that I offer, just to give another angle on looking at the text and basically trying to, the point of the book is to encourage the reader to say, here are all the building blocks you need to figure out this verse on your own. And so try to put it together as best you can. And then in my translation, I'm putting it together in one way. I'm not saying this is the only way to put it together. And of course, there's a lot of published translations out there that readers can consult too. But so this book is somewhat different from the 2 minutes a day books because I'm offering my own translations and also because everything's parsed and everything is glossed. So it's kind of like more information to allow you to wrestle through the text, which I think is helpful, particularly in the case of Proverbs, because they're pretty difficult to understand some of the time.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic resource as well, Jonathan. Are you able to tell us about anything else that might be in development that we can look forward to seeing?
Yeah, I might have to be a little vague here. I have some projects in the works. Probably shouldn't give too many details, but I think now that I've put out these six daily readers, the 2 minutes a day books and a proverb a day, I think I might take a break for at least a little while from the daily reader concept. I think those, that format, I think is really helpful for getting people back into the languages. And I think with Proverbs, it's really helpful because those texts are very difficult to understand. They're often contextually unrelated to the ones around them, with some exceptions. And so I think focusing on just a small portion of text at a sitting or on a page or every day, that's very helpful for certain, if you have certain goals. But obviously reading larger portions of text, reading verses in context, reading chapters, reading entire books of the Bible, those are the things that that give you real mastery. And that are really satisfying, and that are the real goal, of course, is to read things contextually and read large swaths of text. And so I'm trying to focus in the new directions I'm going in on projects that help more with that, with contextual reading and larger portions of text. So yeah, those are the main things. But as I said, we're always trying to brainstorm here at Hendrickson, and I'm always delighted to hear from people about what they think should be out there, because obviously I'm one person and I have my own ideas about what kind of resource might work for me, or what I think might work for pastors or scholars or students. But I'm not a pastor myself, and so I don't fully understand the needs and goals of pastors or what they might want or what might be most user friendly for them. And so I'm always wanting to hear what people have to say in terms of what would be most helpful for them.
Well, Jonathan, that sounds both very mysterious and very promising. So we look forward to seeing what the outcome of that project and work might be. You've taken up quite a lot of your time today. Really appreciate you coming on to the show to talk to us. And thanks for your time, and take care.
Thank you so much, Crawford. It's been a real pleasure talking with you. I really appreciate it.
It's been great. And thanks to everyone else for listening in today. I'll see you next time on New Books and Christian Studies, a channel on the New Books Network podcast.